There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? All good things must come to an end. And so must this! It's the last episode of our series on heist films called This is a Good Place for a Stick-Up. We've seen folks steal diamonds, gold, priceless scepters, digital stuff, art, reputations, and our hearts. Well, not so much of that last one. For the coveted final slot, we're going to be looking at one of the 1960s favorites of the genre, The Pink Panther. Heck, it's only been 60 years. This film still feels fresh, doesn't it? I know I do on this summer's eve. You know who else feels fresh? That movie critic extraordinaire, Max, where's my pants, Levine? Oh, Max, someone stole them again. What have you got to say for yourself?
Not now, Kato, you fool.
Not in this film. True. And me, I'm just Mike. I got your pants right here, loose. Well, no reason to waste any more time. Let's get to you.
Me?
You.
Poll question.
Last week, we asked what object would you most like to heist?
Yes, what object would Max most like to heist? What were your guesses?
Well, we'll see. Well, this is how they answered. Vince, master thief of all Canada, answered, quote, Mike might know better than me, but I can't think of a film that involved a rare comic book that is the subject of a heist. High-value comic book trading is a world I think has never been shown in film, and it could be interesting, end quote. You know, I don't recall a rare comic book heist movie either, do you?
There are a couple I've seen. I don't know if they count as heist movies. There's one called Comic Book Villains, which is about two different comic stores vying for an old man's collection of rare comics, and I think eventually killing him.
Oh.
I think there's murder involved. I don't remember. But I don't think there's ever been like a big break-in like to Christie's Auction House movie.
Could you just see it though? Because you know who the thieves would be.
I've got my super spy stuff. I can go and climb outside like Spider-Man.
Okay, I'll get through the window. I'm stuck. Oh God,
give
where's
me a
my
push.
Inhaler?
I just sprayed for nerds last week.
Worst heist ever.
You know what, though? Uh-huh. That actually might be really funny.
It actually might.
Thanks, Vince. Yeah. We had fun with it. Yep. Reaching deep down the hole that is our mailbag, I find we have another fine response from that Irish lad, Bill O'Lading. Max?
Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
He wrote, quote, The Declaration of Independence. National Treasure 2004 is a hot mess. It's just ridiculous, but it's a fun romp if you're already drinking. The scene where the robbers hold up the bulletproof casing-cased document to block the police's spray of gunfire had me laughing so hard, I still smile at it now, end quote. That is a fun romp indeed, more so than it has any right to be.
See our entire episode on National Treasure.
Yeah. In any case, thanks, Bill.
Yeah, nice one.
Over on the Facebook, Keith Wright was up first. He wrote, quote, cows. I don't know why, but the logistics of a cow heist would be fun to watch, end quote.
That's called cattle rustling.
Well, I think he means like modern day cows. Oh. But hey, I got no beef with that. Har!
I don't
Thanks,
get it.
Keith. I know you don't. More's the pity. Yeah. Brian Mundo sent, quote, maybe like some stones with some squiggles on them and they're needed to save the world somehow. Or cows. Oh, I think that'd be cool too, end quote. There was supposed to be a case with four stones in it. Not one, not two, not three, but four.
I'm disappointed.
Thanks, Brian. Byron Ho said simply, quote, fursuits, end quote. Sure. Thanks, Byron. Okay. You know what a fursuit is, right? The mascot costume.
Interesting. Yeah. Have a whole, like, I guess you'd have, like, a bunch of furry criminals stealing stuff.
To be fair, it happens.
People steal other people's fursuits?
Well, fursuits can run anywhere between $5, $10, and higher thousands of dollars.
Wow.
So, yeah, people steal them. I just don't know what you do with them. Well, no, that's not true. I know exactly what you do with them, and I don't want to tell you.
Nope. That's fine.
Yeah. Thank you, Byron, and happy birthday.
Dave.
Offered, quote, Tough one because it's all been done. I mean, I am as big a fan of cattle rustling as the next guy, but it has been done. Similarly, diamonds are cliche, and a girl's best friend. Even the leader's nose has been done, which seems to be the outer limit of caper movies, though it might be fun to see a caper about the theft of our current president's nose. Maybe some UFC-related nose theft caper. I guess I would say, final answer, the three treasures, mirror, sword, and jewel of the Japanese emperor, end quote. Sure. Noses, they're what's for dinner.
Thanks, Dave. That's from Sleeper.
Is that what that is?
The leader's nose, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man, haven't seen that in a long time. Yeah,
you got to say, though, to steal our current president's nose, all you have to do is go up and go, hey, got your nose.
No, I can't do it, and I won't. Yeah, he probably would fall for it. Let's just say that. Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Dan Schaefer said, quote, the recent art heist of the banana duct tape to the wall might make a good story, end quote. Ah, yes, contemporary art. It's both delicious and nutritious. Let's not talk about the banana, because, let's just, thanks, Dan. Although I like art theft. Mm. Tyler Stewart sent one I had to look up, quote, the heart of Koschei the Deathless, set in modern Moscow or St. Petersburg, end quote. Interesting. What do you know about it, Max? I don't...
It's from Russian folklore.
Oh.
Koschei the Deathless was this guy who figured out how to remove his heart and hid it inside, I don't remember, it was like a duck egg inside a chicken inside of something.
Oh, a turducken. So he hides his heart in a turducken. Okay.
Something like, pretty much in a turducken. And of course, he's killed at Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, well, I mean, wouldn't the removal of said heart also cause the death
that
condition?
That makes him immortal.
I see.
You take out your heart, it makes you immortal.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks, Tyler. Matt Reisman posted, quote, maple syrup, of course, end quote.
Uh-oh. All right. Oh, no.
That's a deeper. Look it up, folks. Yeah. Actually, don't look it up. Yeah. There was a great Canadian maple syrup heist of 2011-2012 where thieves slowly siphoned off 3,000 tons, that's T-O-N-N-E-S, of maple syrup worth over, take a guess, Max.
$3 million.
$25 million.
Wow.
And that's American. It is literally the biggest Canadian heist ever. And apparently Matt likes maple syrup.
I think there's a mini series about it or a movie.
I think you might be right, but because what else would you steal in Canada? I know, that's just mean. That's just
You'd
mean.
Steal hockey.
Or Vince.
Or Vince.
But yes, thank you, Matt. Mm. Charles Forsyth answered, quote, does a gem count as money? Like a giant pink diamond with a flaw that looks like a crouching panther? Oh, Charles, what a coincidence we have for you. He continues. Or maybe I have a mind that's so powerful, it's legally been split into two parts. The parts are blocked from trying to rejoin, so one part launches a convoluted plot to set in motion a series of events that will eventually allow it to connect with the other part, while the other part tries its best to stop this from happening. This is the plot of the 1984 novel Neuromancer, which might be coming as a TV series if Skydance Paramount merger doesn't kill it, end quote. You know, I have 75 PSI in my head.
Johnny Pneumatic.
Yeah, I know. Right author, wrong book. But anyway, thank you, Charles. Mm. Is that the plot of Neuromancer? I forgot. I can't read it.
I remember. It's kind of, in a way, it's kind of the plot of Total Recall with Arnold. You know, he's his original personality.
Yeah.
Trying to get back to,
that. Well, didn't they also remake that with somebody with Colin Farrell or something?
Yes, they did. Colin Farrell or Colin Firth.
Colin Farrell's become the modern day Wayne Rogers. When you need to remake something or you haven't got somebody you want, you just get Colin Farrell.
And it works.
Isn't that great? Lastly, we have Max's moist little flame, Doris Hempelmeyer, on our hotline. Try and keep your breathing under control, Max.
Yes, my little heart spark.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Dora Simple Mikey here to answer your poll question. I'm going to go with an unusual one. I'm going to go with the attaché case in Ronin. Because I want to know what the heck is in it. Boy, talk about a MacGuffin. Anyway, I'm going to make it short this week. That's my answer. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Oh, the attaché case from Ronin. Interesting.
The MacGuffin of Ronin. All right. That's
one
interesting.
Of three briefcases I can think that's a mystery.
Wait, there's one from Pulp Fiction. What's the third?
Well, to be fair, one of them isn't a briefcase, but it's in the trunk, and that's from Repo Man. That's the dead alien.
Oh, okay. But, yeah. I don't count that as a briefcase.
That's fair.
A thing we never see. That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, just alien. But yeah, thanks, Doris. Yeah. And Max, you've got to answer as well. So what trinket do you want to line your pockets with?
I want the damn Holy Grail.
Okay.
A bunch of people have been trying to steal that. I want that. I don't care if it does, as long as I choose wisely. I don't care about the immortality. I just want
stay
the
in
cup.
The room.
The cup would be a cool thing. Oh, yeah. Over there, that's a painting my friend Mike did. That next to it, that's a Holy Grail. That over there, that's something I picked up in Chinatown.
Okay.
I just like the idea because it reminds me of that. I think it was a Neil Gaiman short story about the old woman who had the Holy Grail just up on her mantelpiece.
Yeah, she found some sort of like red dust in the bottom of it, so she just wiped that out.
Yeah, that was a mess. Yeah. Oops. What about you? What fabulous treasure that has been heisted would you want?
I want the crystal skull so I can smash it. Maybe I can stop the movie from happening.
Oh, okay.
The crystal skull. Sad thing is, I'm not really that picky. A nice pile of gold would be fine. I'd be totally fine with a nice little pile of gold. So, yeah. Or, it could be a famous painting. But the thing is, I don't want the painting for the value. I just like to have it because it's pretty, and I want to look at it. But, yeah, I'm not that materially minded. The money would literally be so I don't have to work anymore.
That's a good reason.
That's really all I want. The leave me alone money, that's what I want. So, yeah. But your answers were all great and a lot of fun, too.
Terrific stuff.
Thank you all. Won't you apply that great energy to another? We'd like to know what movie really, really needs a remake. What film was okay but could be made a lot better? Let us know, won't you? For now, let's get back to The Pink Panther or El Pantera Rosa and...
The facts.
Budget. Seems to be about $3 million. It's hard to say. Nobody wants to fess up. But the take, $10 million. That is a big success for the 1960s.
Gee, it's a shame they never made any sequels. Oh, wait.
I think there are 9 total. Oh, yeah.
9 times.
Yes. Yeah. And I think 3 of them have Peter Sellers in them.
Yeah.
As successful as the movie was, its mascot, a character developed by the DePatie Freleng Studio, not only went to open other Pink Panther films, he had a long-running cartoon show of his own, but continues to be employed by Owens Corning to sell their insulation.
That's right, Pink Panther insulation. You used to see that everywhere.
Hey, I'd line my house with Pink Panthers. He's fun. We almost got Audrey Hepburn as the princess, which would be even harder to explain when it comes to the character's background, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Did you know that a little girl from India could grow up to be Audrey Hepburn?
I did not.
Well, luckily that didn't happen.
She had Michael Jackson syndrome, did she?
No. Mm-hmm. The woman who did play the princess, Claudia Cardinale, did not speak English, so her entire part was dubbed. Whee!
Oh, dear. All right.
Yeah. Hey, so that fun little bathtub scene where Clouseau's wife is hiding budding thief Robert Wagner, those bubbles weren't soap. They were some kind of chemical foaming agent that not only burned skin, but blinded Wagner for weeks. because he was submerged.
God, that's some Wizard of Oz level stuff.
Yeah, we're going to kill some flying monkeys. Oof. As we reported last week, Peter Ustinov was originally slated to play Clouseau, but his wife convinced him not to. So they grabbed Peter Sellers, and the rest, is this movie, which...
I'm betting Mrs. Ustinov did not hear the end of that for a long time.
Well, as we also reported, Sellers was replaced with Ustinov in Top Copy, which worked out fine as Ustinov won an Oscar for his role.
True.
I mean, it's, not $90 billion, but it's still... David Niven's character would return without him. In 1975, The Return of the Pink Panther was released, but had Christopher Plummer in the role. Niven would take back the role in the unsuccessful 1982 outing, Trail of the Pink Panther. You remember that one, Max, don't you?
Nope.
Me neither.
Not even a little.
Nope.
Yeah,
nope.
I know it existed. I remember it, but I also remember either Sellers isn't in it or they use clips of him from other movies.
Oh, wasn't there a scene where he's looking in the mirror and they have a picture of Peter Sellers taped over the mirror?
No, that's Bruce Lee.
Oh, well, but we wouldn't confuse Bruce Lee for Peter Sellers. Why would they do that?
Just read the rest of your script.
Yeah. We're missing a few of the Clouseau staples, such as Chief Inspector Dreyfus, Cato, and Clouseau's accent. But there's reasons for that we'll get to when we talk about the film. And likely so much more. Max, do you have any facts or two to impart?
Well, I was just looking through the cast list, and I know we'll come to him later, but I would like to say that James Lanphier, who plays Salud. Because basically any time they needed a slightly dark-complexioned actor in the 60s and 70s, they got James Lanphier. And he was in The Deadly Mantis.
Ah.
Yes, as one of the background military people. Attack of the 50-foot chicken wing.
Ah, The Deadly Mantis. What a brilliant film that is. Yep. But, cool. Well, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
Well, then why don't we get to the plot? And this is going to be highly condensed, just so you know. It's the early 60s, and the jewelry cases of the rich and famous are the playground of the notorious Phantom. A gentleman burglar, he steals silently in the night, leaving a glove with the letter P embroidered on it. Ah, what a dashing rogue. He's stolen 15 bits and bobs before, but now he has his eye on the fabulous Pink Panther, a diamond that has a tiny flaw in its center which is said to resemble, well, you know. It's owned by the lovely princess of something. She keeps it close, and Inspector Clouseau of the Sûreté is even closer still, hoping to stop the theft of the prize jewel. Other folks that are close include Sir Charles Lytton. Might he be the Phantom? Or is it his ne'er-do-well nephew, George? Clouseau's wife, Capuchine, seems a bit shifty. Perhaps she's the Phantom. Or could it be
Henry, the mild-mannered janitor?
Could be! Could it be Clouseau himself? Couldn't be, as the bubbling detective wouldn't know a sandal from a sandwich. Still, as the Phantom plots, Clouseau is always nearby. Will Lytton charm the princess? Will George seduce Mrs. Clouseau? And is the princess as innocent as she seems? Do stay tuned, folks, as this is going to be another show.
The film.
All right, Max. Yeah. I know you've seen this. This was a staple of Channel 56 all through the 70s.
I think I have seen all of it, but I don't think I saw it all contiguously. I'd like watch for 20 minutes or so and then turn the channel, and then I'd come back another week and it would be there and I'd watch another piece. So this is the first time I have seen it from start to finish in a row.
Oh, cool. So how long has it been, do you think, since you've seen it?
Half a million years? I'm not sure. It's got to be at least 30 years.
Yeah, same thing for me. It's just been forever.
But you did see, do you remember watching it from start to finish?
That's a toughie. I'm going to say maybe, but honestly, the film I remember better, the one I always thought, like you, was the first one, is Shot in the Dark. I remember seeing that one a number of times, and I remember the end of it very well because it takes place in this big house and the lights go out and everybody's running around like crazy. But yeah, so I remember the ending of this film. And I remember a bit of the car chase, which we'll get back to. But other than that, I don't know if I've seen it. If I've seen it in its entirety, it's been forever. But we have a cast we should get to.
Yes.
And so we will get to that cast. First up is David Niven.
Ah.
Now, David Niven, correct me if I'm wrong, generally when we see David Niven, he plays David Niven.
Pretty much.
I mean, which is fine if that's what you're looking for. Quite honestly, I don't see much difference between this character and Dick Charleston, but, you know, he's fine. Yeah. We have an issue with David Niven in this film. He thought he was supposed to be the main character of this film.
Well, he is supposed to be. It's just
he gets top billing.
I do remember this is one piece of trivia I came across. It's not definitive, but they've said that the cast and crew loved Sellers' portrayal so much that they pushed for him to be made more of the main character.
Apparently, a lot of it had to do with Sellers and, not Bogdanovich, I'm sorry, Blake Edwards' discussions together. Because, of course, Ustinov would have played this totally differently.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't get to see a lot of it, but he wouldn't have had the physicality that Peter Sellers does. And Peter Sellers, well, we'll get to him, but he has this physicality.
Yes, he does.
He was not thrilled once the film came out to find out that he wasn't really the main character. And in fact, when he was to present at the 1964 Academy Awards, He asked that they not play the theme to the Pink Panther as, quote, it wasn't his movie.
Ooh, ouch.
So
they didn't, right?
No, they changed the music to something else. But
was that the same year the guy streaked the stage when he was on?
Oh, boy. No, I think that was 70s. I think that was later.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Oh, that's right. The streaking craze was in.
I mean, if you want that upper crust Brit, you've got David Niven. I mean, he designed that mustache, which is called the David Niven. I don't think there is another name for it, but yeah.
He is really good at playing the elegant aristocrat.
Yeah. So yeah, he does fine. He does very fine. He's the gentleman thief. Yeah, we're good with
and
that.
And he's funny. He can do physical comedy.
Yeah, I would say that I wouldn't go and say that he, and I'm sure this was a problem, I don't think he's as funny as Peter Sellers.
No, but very few people were.
Well, and speaking of Peter Sellers, he was not a big name before this film.
No, not at all.
And this really launched him, and in fact launched a series of films that we just mentioned. But he plays Inspector Jacques Clouseau. I'm sure the name was not total happenstance that it sounded vaguely.
I've always wondered about that. You think they were actually like taking a little nudge at Jacques Clouseau?
Okay. Yes, I totally think they were.
The
only issue I have with Peter Sellers is he's not Clouseau enough, but that's not his fault.
He's toning it down a fair amount, which is quite something when you look at this and see what an absolute bumbling klutz Clouseau is in this, but he's not as over the top as he is in the later Pink Panther movies, where you wonder, how did this man survive to adulthood?
Never mind reach the position of inspector, but yeah.
Really makes me question the Sûreté's policies, not to mention his chief inspector, who we see later, who's really one of the most fun parts of the series.
Especially because he spends so much time trying to kill him.
That's only in Revenge or Strikes Back? One of them.
Yeah. Kill Clouseau. Kill Clouseau.
Kill
Clouseau.
Kill him. Kill him. Kill you.
Yeah. Herbert then we Wong's have hilarious. 12-year-old Robert Wagner.
My God. I knew he was in this. I was pretty sure what part he was playing, but the first time I saw him, I was like, who the hell's that?
Who's
the skinny little boy?
Yeah, especially he's got one shirtless scene and it's like, oh, get him. He's been out starving. He's been in a ditch for weeks.
Like, count his ribs. My God.
Yeah. Well, you know why they hired Robert Wagner?
No.
It Takes a Thief.
Oh. Are you sure? So I assume the director had a heart-to-heart talk with him?
Oh. Two can play that game. Nice backhand, Max.
Thank you, sir.
And Robert Wagner, he's one of those suave, easy on the eye. He plays erudite and a rich young guy very well. I think the name of the character was Alexander Mundy in It Takes a Thief, and he captured the hearts of many a housewife. So he works out very well in this. He's supposed to be the ne'er-do-well nephew who has not been going to college, but in fact has been basically taking the money and just having a good time. And he fits that lifestyle really well. So
yeah, Robert Wagner doesn't have a lot of range.
No,
but he actually can be very funny. If you ever see the Austin Powers movies where he plays number one, he's actually pretty funny in that.
Looks like number two from where I'm sitting.
What does he mean?
I'll tell you later. It's disgusting. So yeah, he's perfectly fine. Then we have Capucine.
That's as Simone Clouseau.
Yeah. Yep. I think she actually does very well, and it's kind of too bad her part's so small.
I was surprised. She actually does physical comedy really well also. Yeah. And she looks so elegant and suave and gorgeous. And then she'll like bang her head on the table really hard or
she
trip
that,
over
like,
something.
1960s Jackie O chic. Yeah. That is what she, and of course Jackie
very
O got
chic,
it from
that's the word.
She's chic. She is very chic. And she doesn't have
a lot
to do.
She's a lot of fun.
Yeah. She's playing both ends against the middle, which is kind of fun. Then we have Brenda DeBanzi as Angela Dunning. She's
very small part. She's fine.
She plays the
socialite hostess.
Yeah, she's fine. Yeah. Colin Gordon plays Tucker, who's there. I mean, pretty much after this, it's except for your friend James Lanfear. We have and the rest.
Well, there's also the princess, Claudia Cardinale, who apparently doesn't do her own dialogue.
No, and I sit there and when I had to be told by her expository dialogue that she was the grown-up version of that little Indian girl. It's like, got pale as you got older.
Well, come on. She at least has a slight tan, like she's been in Saint-Tropez or something.
Yeah, Band de Soleil.
That's about, yeah.
So it didn't occur to me that she was being dubbed, so she's fine, I guess. Mm. You know, she's there to be, what do you do for a living? I'm beautiful. Okay, there we go. Yeah. That's what she does. So
that's pretty much what she does.
Yeah, and this is not an American film. Blake Edwards, I believe, is American, but the rest of it is all, and Robert Wagner, but everybody else is British or European from the country of Europe. So the opening of the film has probably the best known and probably one of the best movie themes ever.
Henry Mancini, the Pink Panther theme. Do you think people recognize it still?
Oh, yeah. Even if they don't know what it is, they recognize it.
Okay. I mean, to me, it always seems now people think, oh, that's they associate it with sneaking.
Sure.
You know, like a thief or something, not necessarily with the Pink Panther.
But it's like that's the part that every saxophone player wants to learn and play.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it's sultry, it's silky, it's got that kind of little spy vibe to it. And we get this sassy, really fun little cartoon to go along with that, too.
The cartoon's great, and that's Friz Freleng, isn't it?
He is DePatie Freleng.
Animators.
Yep. I don't know where Dave DePatie came from. I don't remember. I don't know that much about animation background.
I had to look him up. He was actually one of the longest-serving producers or heads of Warner Brothers Animation.
Oh, cool. It's a fun little thing, and they did it as sort of a throwaway. Like, it wasn't really meant to be a thing. And, of course, they're like, he's got a lot of character. We should do something with him. And they would. I remember watching the Pink Panther growing up when I was a kid on Saturday morning cartoons. And the Jewish aardvark, who was blue for some reason.
Yeah, and I never got that. I thought the aardvark was kind of funny, but for some reason he talked like Jackie Mason.
Yeah. And
didn't the ant talk like Bing Crosby?
I don't remember well enough.
He was also doing a celebrity voice. It wasn't the celebrity, but I can't remember who he was.
That's actually a very common voice acting trick where it's like some of your best characters come from bad impressions you do of other people.
Oh,
so
I have no idea what you mean.
For example, there's that one. Well, Simon Bar Sinister, perfect example. It is somebody's bad impersonation of Lionel Barrymore, which once you know that, you can see it, but it's like it isn't. It's just wonderfully its own thing because the guy can't actually do Lionel Barrymore. So,
sure. Yeah. Or Top Cat, who's supposed to be Phil Silvers and is doing a Phil Silvers. Yep.
It is amazing how many things Phil Silvers wasn't in that he was in, kind of, because people did him all the time. Yep. So, and if you don't know him, look him up, kids. That's 50s, 50s and
60s. You can also find his name under Harold Hecuba.
Sure. So we start off with a really fun little cartoon and a great theme. The other thing is we are going all over Europe. There's lots of different locations and it really adds to things. But the one thing I'm noticing is how little traffic there is. Dear gods, do I miss that.
My also, the lack of traffic in Rome, please. Rome has been legendary about bad traffic since the cars were invented.
I got to say, when I was there in 2012, it wasn't that the traffic was bad. It's just that they don't do things like have lanes or traffic lights or anything. They just sort of, it's this weird chaos that I don't understand as a non-Italian, but seems to make perfect sense to them. These are the same people who one small town when they finally got traffic lights, and I think this is in the 21st century, they finally got traffic lights. The locals stoned them because they didn't want them. But we have Rome, we have Paris, we have the Italian Alps. And it really gives that international feeling to the movie. It's when things were still exotic. And I got to say, it's photographed really beautifully. I want to go to these places.
It does look very pretty.
But I want to go with them with the number of people that are going to them in the film, i.e. almost no one. So
I want to go to them and stay in those incredibly fancy hotels.
I know, right?
That are the size of like two-bedroom apartments.
We also get these rooms, and they're, as Max said, they're gigantic. And you can tell, these are in the studio and this over here. Now we're actually out. And they were actually out in snow, and good for them. Because if we've proved anything on Max Mike Movies, it's that whenever you fake snow, we all know it.
Yep, it's pretty obvious.
So we're dealing with the upper crust, right? We're dealing with rich people and stuff. And then we've got this kind of, not quite opposite, but we've got Peter Sellers wandering in doing slapstick.
Yeah.
How do you think those two things work together?
Sometimes it's jarring, I gotta say, because most of the rest of the humor is sort of bedroom farce kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. Well, except obviously Clouseau's not getting any.
No. Poor Jacques.
Yeah.
Thank God.
He's going to have to Jacques off.
You're so fired. You're going to be censored. Apple's going to punch you in the nose.
I said it in French. It won't bother anyone. I'm sorry, Jacques. Oof.
But honestly, the whole idea with humor is surprise, and it's always surprising initially when he does stuff. Eventually, you're like, well, that's going to break. But I think it kind of works. It's sometimes during, but then they start having other people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mrs. Clouseau falls down or knocks things over. Robert Wagner runs over David Niven on skis.
Yeah, and we get almost the cartoon, like, he doesn't quite have the shape in the snow of him, but
that's what I was thinking. There are a number of very cartoonish elements to this, and not just the intro animation. I mean, the stuff with the fireworks.
Yeah.
I'm like,
which
really?
Are actually deadly, but okay.
Yeah, and of course, it's like, oh, that's cute. It's a Roman candle, and they're in Rome.
And he needed a candle.
He needed. Yep, that's the other thing. The mistaking an explosive device for a candle. How often has that happened to Elmer or Wile E. Coyote or anybody?
Well, remember, we also had two friends that during our yearly marathon would go out in the snow with two Roman candles and trash can lids and have a wizard duel.
shooting the things at each other, and somehow they both lived.
Yeah, don't understand that, but I actually like the mix of Grace, because of course Grace is a part of that living well thing, right? Mm-hmm. We have people that have manners and the way they hold themselves, and then you have Clouseau coming in dressed just like they are and tripping over his shoes and stuff like that, and
being
it's
an
not
idiot.
The way, this is what I wanted to come back to with his performance, his physical comedy does have this grace to it.
It does. His smallest gestures can be funny. Little things I noticed, like when he's leaving the bathroom and he's trying to be suave and he's trying to turn the light off and nothing happens. And then he gets this little look and you just see him raise his hand about 6 inches. He missed the switch.
Right.
Not a big thing, but it's really funny.
Yeah. And when he trips, it's not, it's like you, if it was done or overdone in another more clumsy way, you would sit there and say, well, he'd never get his shoes on in the morning. And we believe it's just whenever he starts to be supercilious or he's trying to be in command or whatever, that's when he starts to mess up. And I thought his performance, and then I didn't remember this having not seen it in decades, but I thought his performance of that physical comedy was very graceful in and of
absolutely. Itself. His pratfalls are practically balletic, you know? Yeah. It's amazing.
Then speaking of Grace, we get to that first party, and there's a very famous dance we see here, Max. I don't know if you know the actual name for this, but it's called the White People Slowfoot Shuffle.
Oh, I was going to call it the Batusi.
No, it's not even that energetic. I'm sorry. It is the White People Slowfoot Shuffle. Oh, by the way, in case you were wondering, no, there is not a single person of color. Well, that's not fair. In the beginning, we have some people from Kreplakistan or wherever she's supposed to be from. But they're quickly shooed away so they can grow up into white people. So, although I guess Salud stays around. So.
Yeah, but I also think he's just mostly a deep tan.
Yeah, could be. Don't know. But white people
also,
dancing.
He was born in Long Island.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Was it at least Eastern Long Island?
I don't know.
So we get white people dancing, always good for a laugh, although it was not meant to be funny, but it was. I don't know. I laughed at it. Yeah.
It was pretty amusing.
I will also say that at least in the beginning of the film, as the plot or the I don't want to use the word action. I really don't want to use the word action. Starts to slow down. That's when Clouseau trips over something. And it sort of brings us back, which I thought was, in the early part of the film, was very well timed.
I like your observation that it's like his clumsiness humbles him.
Yeah.
It's when he's trying to be super confident or, you know, I am, you know, the great Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, no, it undercuts his authority at every turn.
Well, also, the sad part of the character, at least in this film, is he's right.
Yeah, he is. He figures out, he knows who the Phantom is, and no one else believes him.
Yeah, and he just a matter of proof, and he even says, I can't take him in, I don't have proof, I need to find proof.
I got a couple of questions. What do you think of the musical number in the middle? The Italian song.
I didn't mind the Italian song so much. What I minded, and I was going to ask you about this, is the singer decides to break the fourth wall.
Yeah, she's looking right at us.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah, she's dancing with the cameraman.
The only thing I can think of is it being a singer and not a performer. She didn't know any better. Although there's this person, what are they called? It's a director. Yes, oh, there's a director who could tell her, stop looking at the camera.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not uncommon for films of that era.
Oh, very common.
It's like, yeah. I mean, Charade has one in there. In fact, they sing the theme song of the movie in the movie, something that I generally don't
care for. I love a charade.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So I didn't mind it. I sort of, one of those things that's sort of a cultural expectation. It's the 60s. It's a European film. There's a song in it. Does it add anything to the plot or the movie? No. What did you think?
I think it's cute. As you say, it's very dated. It's very much a thing of its time.
Yeah.
But it's fun. And I do like that she gets not really a conga line going, but a dance line going. And she drags in Clouseau. And again, it's another tribute to Peter Sellers. He's supposed to look silly. But you can't help noticing he's actually really, he's really good.
He has
rhythm. He stays on beat perfectly.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually step on anyone.
He falls out of line and stuff. And but yeah, it's not. It's
but
not
he always does to the music.
Yeah. So, but the little dance number, whatever you want to call it, was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. The other thing is, how did you feel about Charles Lytton trying to seduce the princess?
You mean the fact that he's 50-something and she's 20-something?
She's 53, she's 25.
Yeah, so I was right there. Let's see, what's would the word uncomfortable be at all appropriate?
I think so.
How about ew?
Ew, yeah. I mean, again, I know this was a thing. We've seen Fred Astaire when he was, I think, 98, trying to romance Audrey Hepburn when she was 12, and... or some such.
I mean, it's even uncomfortable, it again, in Charade, but for some reason, you get the impression that even if Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn's characters got together, there wouldn't be any sex.
I mean... Well, no, because Cary Grant didn't swing that way.
He might have been bi. Question. I don't remember. Yeah, it was still icky, but somehow you still got the impression that he was never going to actually do anything with her. Yeah, I don't know why. But
it's funny. It was simultaneously sleazy and innocent. Because when she passes out, because he gets her drunk for the first time.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is the only time she's funny.
No. Yeah. Well, that's not her part.
Nope. But she is funny. Too bad. Because there are some funny lines. I like where she's playing with the tiger rug.
Well, that's the weird part, that she was able to do the facial expressions that matched what was being said so well. Because if she was, playing the drunk, she did fine facially, but it just wasn't her voice. I'm guessing that she was probably reading her lines phonetically and just didn't understand them. I don't know. Probably.
Yeah. And I have to say, when she passes out, there is no sense that he's going to take advantage of her.
No.
He's mostly like, oh, God, all right, how do I get her, how do I get her either out of here or someplace she can sleep that's not on the floor?
Let me bring up a question that just occurred to me. What if we didn't have David Niven in this film? What if we just had Robert Wagner?
Then I think they definitely would have had a sex scene of some kind.
But also, would the film have worked? I'm kind of leaning towards
yes. No. I think it would have worked without him? I like the elegance of the thief.
I think he is elegant, though.
Robert Wagner?
Yeah.
He's more of, what it reminds me of? There was a movie called Dirty Rotten Scoundrels,
which
is probably a remake. Michael Caine and Steve Martin. And Michael Caine is the elegant, careful, planning thief. And Steve Martin is the fast-talking con man. That's what this reminded me of. Because you get the feeling that while George has the instincts, he's cruder and he doesn't plan. He even says he just goes by instinct.
Right, but if you had Robert Wagner playing the David Niven character.
Oh, I see. You made him Sir Charles Lytton?
Yeah.
Maybe. He's a little young because his age gives him some weight to be there and a reputation.
I think that Robert Wagner can pull off the silky, smooth, talking. Yeah. David Niven is, I get it. It's not that he doesn't fit the part, but that combination of him and the princess is just icky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, like you said, this happens in the 60s all the time, but I don't know.
That was a part of this that did feel both dated and uncomfortable is when George is hitting on Mrs. Clouseau.
Yeah.
And he's pretty much attacking her a number of times.
Because, you know, rape is fun.
Rape's hilarious.
And people say, oh, there was no actual sex in that rape. I'm sorry. If the woman says it's rape, it's rape. Now, she didn't, but also, in this case, but that's all that counts. anytime you've got, you know, a man, well, there's other stuff in here, because let's face it, we don't get the racism that we generally associate with the Pink Panther movies, but we do get the misogyny. And here's one of the quotes that really dented the tone of the movie for me. And the quote was, quote, "That makes you vulnerable. It makes you a woman," end quote.
Yep.
I'm going to go with F you.
Yeah. Bite me.
Yeah.
This is the leader of a country. What is wrong with you?
Doesn't matter who she is. Why is being vulnerable means that's what a woman is. Women are vulnerable. Up yours.
Yes, they're soft and vulnerable and squishy and everything.
And then they stab you in the back, so good for you. Stab him. Nab him. Tab him. Grab him.
Stop that pigeon now.
That's a deeper. So yeah, I didn't. There was a couple of quotes about, you know, how women are and supposed to be. And it's like, yes, it's the time period. It just makes my eyes roll and I groan every time I see it.
Yeah.
What did you think of the pacing?
It was uneven. And I'm sorry, that is a thing with Blake Edwards that I find. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it moves along. It's really funny. The sequences at the party. I'll get to that. I want to get back to the party. The ski chases. But there are points when you just go, will you end the damn scene already?
One of my notes was way too much talking, not enough action.
Yes. Yeah.
Also, too much David Niven, not enough Peter Sellers. But
that's the thing. It's like, come on, let Clouseau fall over something. Stop trying to look cool.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad because David Niven tries to do some of the physical comedy, falling into the snow, being run over. And did you think it was funny?
No.
Nothing against David Niven, but that's not what he does.
No.
He's not a physical comedian.
Well, and even in Murder by Death, see our entire episode of Murder by Death, he mostly does the wordplay, that's where he's strongest. There's one like tiny little thing where he's searching the dead body of Alec Guinness and he thinks, oh, I think I see, oh, never mind. But like that's most physical he gets, and that's fine. He does great with that.
It's not slapstick. It's not pratfall. He's witty rather than funny.
Yeah, and he should stay that way.
Yeah, he should stay that way.
He's dead now,
I didn't think Robert Wagner was terribly convincing with the physical humor either.
No, but he can move like a cat. Like he makes the cat burglar part is perfect. He didn't actually get to do that in this film.
No.
But no, I don't find it. Again, when you've got Peter Sellers, whom I didn't really appreciate, when you've got somebody who can control themselves that well, then it's like, oh yeah, you should not do that. Or at least not in the same movie.
That's the thing. I was impressed that Capuchin kind of held her own the few times.
A nice cappuccino right now. little cinnamon on the top. That'd be great.
Hey, like that's the silliest name a model's ever come up with.
Yeah. Aquanetta. Not Aquafina. Aquanetta.
No, she's great. Aquanetta.
As a hairspray, but yeah. And a dessert topping.
Yeah.
What else did you want to talk about the party? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I also wanted to say I did not know Stradivarius made violins out of plastic.
And that were so easily repairable in town.
I have to say that part I laughed at because Clouseau plays the violin in bed to get his wife in the mood. He can't play the violin for crap, but at one point, of course, because you know he has to, he steps on it and breaks it and goes, no, well, you've seen one Stradivarius, you've seen them all. I'm going, a police inspector can afford a Stradivarius.
Well, maybe his wife bought it for him because, you know.
Oh, maybe. She's got the money. But then it turns out, no, it's made of plastic. It's like, oh, okay, it's Stradivarius with two Ds.
The worst part is knowing that she would rather hear him play than have sex with him. Because it really does sound like the inside of a cat being scraped against the outside of a cat.
yeah. The party, that's where I think it goes full on cartoon.
Now, this is the last party, the one with the actual heist.
Because
we finally got to that. Yeah.
Because costume party means funny. And of course, we have
supposed to
at least two people dressed as gorillas.
Yes. who happen to be related.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
By the way, did you know you could crack a safe while wearing a gorilla hat, a mask, and gloves?
Yeah. Well, you know, shape of the plastic ear actually will magnify sound.
And there's no equipment.
Like, neither of them even has their little bag of stuff, which we've seen.
And we know he has a bag of stuff, not even a stethoscope. But back in the old days when the safes were so badly made, you could just stick your ear against it and hear click, 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 open.
Well, never mind that for some reason, and it's literally only for a sight gag, we've got not a safe and a wall, but it's got two entrances, one on either side of the wall, which why would you bother to do that?
Why?
So, and then we get this, the gorillas come in and they're in there at different times, so they're mirroring each other's actions and they don't see each other until finally they both open the safe and... Is that me or a mirror image? I'm confused.
It's a Lucy sketch.
It's not even a Lucy sketch. It's when Lucy redid a vaudeville bit. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's not I Love Lucy, it's the Lucy Show. It's not even It's just it just fell flat.
The producers of the Scooby-Doo cartoon saw that and went, "I've got an idea."
Comedy gold, hold me down. Yeah.
That sequence bothered me. I thought that was...
Oh, just that sequence? Because get the fireworks going off, which is hilarious. And then we get a car chase, which is basically the long corridor with doors on either side and people going in and out of the different doors. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know about you, but I was just like, please, somebody start up Yakety Sax. Please, please start up Yakety Sax.
And then they get a sort of car chase where they're just driving... I mean... They're driving around Italian town streets and unable to figure their way out. Although I do like the fact that this old Italian guy has walked out of a bar. Obviously, he's had a few, but they don't make a thing out of it.
It's a trattoria. He's just walked,
trattoria.
So or trattoria, I don't know.
We are marching to trattoria. Yes, he's had plenty of trattor, and... he's trying to go home, and all these cars keep whipping by, two of which have gorillas driving. One of them has a guy in a full suit of armor and another jester, and then two cops dressed as a zebra go running by. And I just like, he just slowly turns around, walks back to the trattoria, picks up one of the chairs, faces the street, and sits down to watch.
Yes, boredly.
Like, what else is going to come by?
And it was at that point that I realized that I've seen another movie whose plot and plot points are very, very similar to this movie.
What's that?
It is one of my favorite films. It is What's Up, Doc?
Oh.
And if you think about it, the whole heist that's going on, the different bags, the confusion, which leads to a car chase, which leads to a courtroom scene, is exactly like this, except what's... Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself, but... What's Up, Doc? Did it better. Just saying.
Well, it's also, they didn't bother with just one heist. There's not just one crime being committed. There's like 12.
Yeah. Well, they're technically four. And it's like, and we're inside a Chinese dragon.
You can see where they must have been inspired by
I'm sure he was. If Bogdanovich wasn't, I'd be amazed. But you know what I also would be amazed about? And that is our questions. We have our five questions about this series.
Lisa.
Oh. No, there are five. Stop that. First off, the Pink Panther diamond, was the loot worth all the effort?
They say it's the most fabulous diamond in the world. That is the word they use, so I would assume.
I mean, it's grandma's doorknob. It really is
grandma's doorknob. That is a big honking rock.
Yeah, and if you don't know what that means, you're not never been to a house in New England, but
Nope. No, an old house in New England.
Yep. Now, I like to ask you about gemstones because you know these things. Sure. If I understand... Not doing a lot of research, but a quick little check, that an actual pink diamond is fairly rare.
They're very rare. For a long time, they were only found in a couple of places. They defined them in a very few places in India.
Oh, good.
And then only in the last, 40 years, they discovered a massive range of them in Australia.
They're not as good as chocolate diamonds.
No, yes. Okay, how are we going to get people to buy these crap brown diamonds? call it chocolate.
Brilliant. Diamonds. Hey, brown. I made some brown diamonds this morning.
Wasn't that a failed Lucky Charms shape, too?
Yeah. Here's a problem,
though. I guess they end up brown. But,
why do they come in different colors? Anyway, I'm not going in there. What do you do with this diamond when you get it? You have to recut it.
You'd have to cut it. You lose a huge amount of... It's the same with any really famous diamond.
Yeah.
The main reason nobody steals them is, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
If you chop it up, you lose like 90% of the value, and no one's going to buy it. Even collectors would be afraid to touch that, because those things are easier to track than art.
Well, now, diamonds work the same way as emeralds did last week. You said it's not just that, oh, this diamond is 10 times the size. Yeah. It's more than 10 times the price, because the bigger ones are rarer. So
bigger ones, it's very hard to put a price on a diamond that size.
But to be fair, basically, looking at
the money.
On the other side of this question, what effort?
They
didn't even climb up with a
very
rope.
Hard. Yeah.
They literally put on a gorilla suit and they walk into a room. Ooh, yeah, what a plot. Is the plan believable? I guess
no,
so. Well, sure.
Really.
Her security stinks. She says, it is safe in my safe back. Oops, don't say where it is. It's in her house. I mean, where else is it going to be?
Yeah, how many places?
So I'd say the plan is as necessary as is the security, because there isn't any.
I guess.
Yeah. Speaking of which, does the security as depicted, which I'm guessing is Clouseau, make sense?
No, it's Clouseau. Come on. Who would put him in? You wouldn't put him in charge of a flea market.
Yeah. Apparently he was successful. He got this far, I guess.
And he was right.
Are the guards or cops under power?
See previous answer.
Well, the problem is he's right. He actually does know who did it or is going to do it. And he's in the right place and he's looking for the right thing. He's just not good enough to actually notice when it happens. So,
but the few other cops we see are no more competent than he is.
No.
They don't break as much, but the guys in the zebra suit drinking out of the punch bowl, come on.
Yeah, okay, Z and bra. Hey, bra, what's up? I don't know, Z, what's up with you?
Hey, bra.
You know that's how they talked, even although it was Italian or French or who knows.
Zebros.
Do we find ourselves rooting for the thieves?
Kinda. I mean, except I don't really feel that much of a connection to any of the characters in this.
No, but also the identity of who's a thief kind of changes at the end.
Yeah.
This is a 60-year-old film. They frame Clouseau and he goes to jail for it. There.
Yeah, they frame Clouseau in the dumbest way possible.
Well,
they put the diamond in his pocket in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, Clouseau is so dumb, people might believe he would actually walk around with it in his coat. But come on.
Yeah, it was meant to be a twist ending, and we're supposed to be rooting for them as they go off and commit other crimes, because now we've got four people. We've got the princess, we have Mrs. Clouseau, we've got Robert Wagner, and we've got David Niven. So they're now, I guess, going off to be thief buddies or something.
Yes.
But I didn't find myself, I don't know, I mean...
Kinda?
I guess... I mean, it's her gem. She ends up with it anyway, so I guess it works out, although they frame Clouseau. Although you don't really feel that badly for Clouseau, which... I mean, that poor guy is in a marriage, and here's how you know your marriage is not going well. If you have to say, my darling, more than once per day, your marriage is in trouble.
Never mind more than once per 15 seconds.
Yeah.
So, and he never notices that she spends $30,000 a year on clothes.
Oh, he notices that she spends a lot on a mink coat, but she says she just saves the egg money in that way. So I'm going to have to say no. We don't really end up rooting for them.
I don't think so.
So I think we're supposed to, but I didn't. So before we get to the end, Max, anything else you want to throw in there?
Just one thing. The whole sequence, like in the bedrooms and the bathroom, it's a French farce, you know?
Right.
It's, oh no, the vicar's coming. Quick, hide in the chamber pot.
May we. Ha, 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 ha.
I'm French, did I mention? But when George and Uncle Charles, you know, the two Littons, begin realizing they're both in the room and they begin to figure out what's going on, they are remarkably untroubled by any of it and seemingly fairly unsurprised.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't quite get why.
No.
They both had completely different ideas of who the other was and, I'm completely wrong. How about that?
Well, you know what else I find unsurprising? The fact that we get to the end of our show and decide whether the Pink Panther holds up.
The finish.
So, Max.
Huh?
Ain't seen it in decades. Maybe never seen the whole thing at all.
Never seen the whole thing in, you know, sequentially.
Right. What do you think of The Pink Panther?
Parts of it are still really funny. I got to admit, Peter Sellers is hilarious. It's very dated. I mean, there's been so much slapstick in the resulting 60 years. But there's something special about the way he does it. He's just such a joy to watch. That said, the rest of the movie is kind of doesn't need to be there. I do like the locations. I agree with it. It looks good and the locations are fun. The clothes are fun. But you really can see why they said, Dave, step out of the way. Would you come? Pete, come on up front.
Dave.
That's right. They're chanting Dave. So, yeah, I think some of it holds up, some of it doesn't. Parts of it still get a chuckle out of me. What about you? How does it work for you?
It's way too slow. It needs about a half an hour chopped out of it. It's almost 2 hours.
That is surprisingly long for a comedy.
Not so surprisingly long for a quote-unquote foreign film. They tend to be a little more languidly paced, true. Especially if there's Brits involved. I love the British, but dear gods, their films are slow. Especially if it's science fiction. Oh, boy.
Oh, just boy.
It takes forever. Mm. I think that they didn't realize what they were making. They thought they were making a heist film starring David Niven. And what they were really doing is they were filming a French farce with Peter Sellers. Mm-hmm. And
creating
obviously
a vehicle for him.
They would figure it out after this film. And apparently, I forgot this, Shot in the Dark came out like less than a year later.
Yeah, it was right on the heels.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, crap, $10 million? I like $10 million. Who wouldn't? So the parts that are funny tend to be around Peter Sellers, and there's not enough of him. And he's not doing enough, quite honestly. He's sort of a secondary character because, of course, they didn't realize what was going on.
Yeah.
The performances are fine. Nobody's outstanding, really. David Niven is David Niven in David Niven on Broadway. I don't think today's audiences would find it really funny. And I think that even the end, just the whole last chunk at the party is just not funny. Unfortunately. So
I like some of it, but yeah.
Visually, it looks great, but
I bet a lot of older people like us will remember thinking it was funny.
Right. But we remember liking it. We just realize we're wrong.
Yeah. Kinda.
Yeah. And it almost doesn't even count as a heist film because there's not even any plot. It's just literally, oh, well, there's a party. I guess we know where it is. I'll steal it then. I won't bring any tools. I'll just bring my gorilla suit.
I'll steal it. No one will ever know.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I'm going to end this series on a unfortunate. Yeah. And I didn't see the remake, so I don't know if that worked. But speaking of remakes, that leads us right back to our poll question. And we'd like to know, what movie really, really does need a remake? What film did you either like and doesn't hold up or didn't quite work, but you really wish it did? Let us know. How can you let us know? Well, I'm glad you asked. How old is she? You can tell us via email, just like our old pal Bella Lading. Just emails directly at us at maxmikemovies.com. Don't forget.
She's smart.
We are getting close to episode 400, and we ain't got no ideas. So if you've got some ideas, please email them to us, because we'd love to know what to do for our 400th episode. Yeah, we're still here.
I think that's the tungsten anniversary? I'm not sure.
Sure. But you could also just find us on our website, which is maxmikemovies.com. You can leave a comment there, talk to Vince, talk to Cheeseboy. Hey, Cheeseboy, I haven't heard from you in a while. Where are you? Wake up, boy.
Yeah, come on, man.
Again, suggestions for films that should be part of a series or a series you'd like us to do, so on and so forth. There, email, either way is fine. Or you can connect with us on social media. Social media, as long as it's Facebook or Blueski. And there we are, Max Mike Movies. Yep. Would you like to call us? Would you like to hear your voice on a podcast heard by people? Then you too could call us at 617-398-7266, just like Doris Hempelmeyer. That's 617-398-7266. But this series is over. We have looked at our heist films. We've seen some fun, some bad, and some Max, we should do a new series. That's what I think we should do. I think we should do a new series. Let's see. It should be a series maybe based on money. Because you know what? That's the most important thing about movies, isn't it?
That's right.
The most
the highs and lows.
But something a little more, you know, jargony, a little bit more descriptive. I know. Yeah. Let's call it Tops and Bottoms. Yes, we're going to look at the top earners of a particular year and the bottom earner.
Do we have to call it that? Because I think there's an implication you may not be thinking about.
Yes, we do. Tops and Bottoms. That's our next series. And what we're going to do is we're going to randomize this a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're going to roll some dice, and we're going to choose a year, and that's the year we're going to look at the top grossing, and if we can find it, the bottom grossing, or at least a bottom grossing film of that year. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to, well, Max, you're the one who's going to roll. You are the GM. You have the dice. So okay, go ahead and roll us, and we have a system worked out, folks, so don't worry about it. We know if it's going to be 20th or 21st century. We're not going further back than that.
Let's do the fur. Okay, it's going to be 20th century.
Okay, 20th century, and what is our year?
The year 1959.
It would seem that, Max, according to this, the top grossing film of 1959 is...
Ben-Hur.
Really? You know,
is that of the Long Island Hers?
No, actually, it's of the Monroe Hers. And that's a very deeper for one of our listeners. Yeah, so I've never actually seen it.
I've seen part of it because one thing I will tell you, this thing is 212 minutes long.
212. That's all the minutes, isn't it?
That's like 3.5 hours, I think.
Well, it made a lot of money, so it has to be good, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's see, it has that fantastic thespian Charlton Heston, who I think is playing, a man with lockjaw and constipation.
Is he Jewish?
No, he's Roman. Yes,
because one bullet dodged. So, yeah.
Wait, actually, I remember he's called Judah Ben-Hur. Oh, God, maybe he is.
Oh, well.
Well, we'll find out. There's only
one way to find out. So, join us next week for Ben-Hur.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench. Thank you.